Mastermind Agent is proud to present Success Calls. Top real estate agents from across North America reveal their success secrets, strategies, and systems in up-close and personal interviews. You can find all the calls at www.mastermindagent.com.
Hi, I'm Mike Cerrone with Mastermind Agent. This month's top agent is Kendra Cook with Bob Parks Realty in Brentwood, Tennessee. Last year, she closed 124 transactions with a total sales volume of $19 million. Her average sales price was $186,000, of which 23% were buyers and 77% were sellers. She operates a team with 10 members, 3 buyer agents, 1 director of operations transaction coordinator, 1 listing coordinator, 1 part-time business development coordinator, 1 part-time field runner, 1 part-time REO coordinator, 1 part-time marketing project manager, and 1 team leader. Kendra Cook is the team leader of Cook Realty Partners. She's been an agent for 16 years. She sold 1,584 homes in her career. In this call, Kendra talks about starting as a part-time receptionist in a real estate office while attending college, learning real estate, working the administrative operations side of a brokerage for 10 years before getting her license, how she sold 24 homes her first year while pushing her newborn in a stroller, why she works as a listing agent with 4 new home builders, how she became the exclusive listing agent in her area for one of the biggest builders in the nation, why building personal relationships is the key to her success, how she built her own networking group with multi-transactional referral partners that resulted in 31 closings last year, her exact marketing plan for past clients and sphere of influence that generates 60 to 80% of her business each year, plus team dynamics, compensation, profit margins, and more. Welcome to the call, Kendra.
Thank you, Mike.
Kendra, before we talk about what you're doing now, let's go back for a minute and talk about what you did before you got into real estate.
Well, unfortunately, there is no before real estate for me. Let me tell you how I got here. I actually am originally from Southern Illinois. My mom was a paralegal, and I kind of always thought I wanted to be a law student and become a lawyer and just, you know, make a lot of money and be very, very, independent woman in the law field. I grew up in Southern Illinois, about 3 hours from Nashville, Tennessee, and we came to Nashville all the time for summer vacations to Opryland. And so I decided after I graduated high school, I would just move to Nashville and work at Opryland until I could get in law school, and the rest is history. Well, unfortunately, it didn't work out like that. When I got here, Opryland had already hired their summer staff, and I went to a temp agency to find work and was placed in a real estate office, answering the phone on the weekend so I could go to school during the day. And the gentleman that owned that firm saw something in me I never saw in myself. He would come in every weekend and sit in front of my desk, and that was before lock boxes. So I had to, you know, organize the big keys in the box every weekend when people would come in to pick up keys to show our listings. And we had the big MLS books, you know, that were delivered, those big hunkin' books. We'd write their names on them on the weekend so it'd be all fresh for the new week. And he would come in and sit in front of my desk, and he kept saying, "I think you're going to be a great realtor." And I kept saying, "No way, I'm going to be an attorney. What are you talking about?" So he continued to inspire me and kind of move me into a path that he said, just come here full time for one semester, just try it. And if you don't like it, I'll pay for you for a semester to go back to school. And I thought, you know, for a struggling student, that was a win-win. And 18 years old. So I said, okay, that's how my real estate journey started. And I started answering the phones there very quickly. He moved me into an administrative position. This was in 88, 89, and 90 when the REO division was booming, like we've been through over the last couple of years in our market. He moved me into an REO position and really taught me how to do financials, how to get the lawn cut, and how to turn the utilities on. And from there, he moved me into a relocation position and kind of handled incoming and outgoing referrals. Just kind of let me blossom. Put me on a journey to work for him for a few years, and then he moved me into a position to work for a top producer. So I technically didn't start selling until I got my license in 97 and started selling in 98. But my whole background, other than working at the Dairy Queen my senior year in high school, has all been in real estate. So that's kind of been my journey. And in 1998, I had my son and was licensed and decided that I wanted to be a little bit more of a mom and have that big word called freedom, which all of us in real estate know there's very little of that until you get some structure and balance going. But that's really how my journey has been. It's all been in real estate.
So you came up through the operational side of a brokerage, and it sounds like you did that for quite a while. Maybe, what is that, almost 10 years?
Yeah, I was about 8.5 years, and I did get licensed in 97, but wasn't selling, was still just a licensed assistant in the operation, and then went on bed rest. And when after I had my son, I said, you know what, I'm going to kind of work the hours that I want to work, and took the approach that I would go into sales. And, you know, God has a different plan for that, too. You know, shortly after we got in sales, I was going to work when I wanted to work. My husband's employment changed, and it was kind of sink or swim. And he said, you know what, you wanted to do this for a long time. If this is what you want to do, let's go for it. So he was a lot of steam in the engine that drove me to kind of become what I am today. So really pushed me along to check out the waters. And fortunately for me, it turned out to be really well.
That first year that you got into the sales side of the business, did you have a fast start or a slow start?
You know, I would say I had a pretty fast start. And for realtors that are listening to the CD that are fairly new, there is a learning curve. You know, people are asking you about mortgages and debt-to-income ratios and title searches. And there's so many behind-the-scenes things that I was so fortunate to have learned in all those years as the back-end office and working with top producers and in a very high-paced office, that I had a lot of that learning curve behind me. And the top producer that I worked with really taught me that you have to market yourself and you have to always be prospecting and, you know, the ABC, always be closing. And he really taught me a lot of things that some of us when we get in the market didn't have that background. So the learning curve's a little harder. And so I would say I had a pretty good quick start.
Do you recall how many homes you sold your first year?
24. 24 houses my first year. I had my son in May. Was very fortunate enough that I lived in a new construction community. And the builder said, hey, you're home all day. Why don't you try to sell some houses? And I knew that I was licensed. And so I was very fortunate that I sold the neighborhood that I lived in. So I put my baby in a stroller and I'd walk up and down the street and crawl in and out of new construction. And that's really where it all started for me. I keep begging my son, he's 15 now. I'm like, don't you want to take over mom's business someday? He's like, no way. So I don't think he's fallen in mom's footsteps. So that's really how it started for me. So I kind of had a quick learning curve, but then I also was put in a very fortunate place that I could sell right out of my front door.
How many years have you had your license and been selling?
16 years, full-time active since 1998.
How many homes did you sell last year?
I sold 124 sides last year for just over $23 million in closed volume.
How many homes did you sell in your best year?
2006. Oh, my goodness. I don't know if I want to go back to there, if that was a blessing or a curse. You remember those days. But we sold 174 homes for just over $28 million in 2006.
How many homes do you think you've sold in your overall career now?
We're averaging about 100 a year. We're at 1,584 homes, 1,584 for my life career. So just about 100 houses a year on average.
Please tell us where Brentwood, Tennessee is.
Brentwood, Tennessee is about 10 miles outside of downtown Nashville, located in Williamson County, fastest growing county in the state of Tennessee, and is made up primarily of three kind of big cities, Brentwood being the first one that you would get to if you were coming out I-65 south out of downtown Nashville, population about 43,000. Then you'll come into Franklin, which is kind of our big boom city where we've got a lot of white-collar jobs that have come up in the last few years, as in like the Nissan headquarters was transferred here from California. We've got Pet Mars who relocated their headquarters here. We have a lot of national health insurance companies and billing companies here. Caterpillar is here. So a lot of office work. We have a huge mall here. And then we have kind of a historical area in Franklin. So that would be the second city, population of about 65,000. And then we have a few little cities around us. Arrington, we have College Grove, we have Thompson Station, we have Spring Hill, and all of those make up the rest of the population, kind of suburbs of Williamson County. And the total population is about 190,000.
Could you please describe your current real estate market?
Okay. be glad to. And I'll back up here, Mike, and share a little story, too, in that my niche market for many, many years was in Rutherford County, which is one county over from Williamson. When I initially went there in 1998, my husband and I built our house there. It was a first-time home buyer market. Smaller homes, easy to qualify, a lot of 100% loans, a lot of FHA. We have the Nissan, actually the plant that builds the battery-operated Leaf car now, and a lot of their manufacturing is in that county. In the last couple of years, we've added, you know, Frankie Supplies. We've got the Amazon manufacturing hub there. We have a lot of more blue-collar jobs in that county, and so that's where I actually live, and my niche market was there for many, many years, 13 years. So I still work that market, have a ton of business there, and will never leave, you know, turn my back on my clients from there because they really are who got me where I am today. But overall, after, as I said, in 2006, after you close, you know, 174 houses, you're like, ooh, I'm tired, and there might be an easier way. And so I thought, you know, if I could transition my business and be between the two counties, then I could still keep my older business and work on some newer, bigger accounts and larger price range of houses and try to grow the business a little smarter versus harder. So I'm centrally located. My home is right between the two counties. I live right on the county line, 9 miles to one office, 15 to the other. So I kind of am diversified. So when I give you these stats, obviously an average of both counties, but I don't want to miss the opportunity to say that, you know, Rutherford County has been very good to me. That's where Middle Tennessee State University is. I still live there. I do a ton of business there, sit on the chamber board. So just want to make sure that I include that in there. Some people that listen to this may know me as a Rutherford County agent, and I'm definitely still Rutherford County. I'm just centrally located so I can work both counties. So, but back to your initial question, what do we sell, average sales price? Last year, our average sales price was about 186. I think we'll probably touch 200 this year, just again, just because some of the price ranges of the things that we have in Williamson County have, you know, moved us up. We may get a little over 200. We have several new construction neighborhoods in Williamson County, which the average sales price over here is in the 300s versus in Rutherford County, where it's in probably around 170. So you can kind of give a little diversity there. Both markets are growing. As I said, we have growth in both areas. Our Nashville Chamber of Commerce, I can't say enough great things about them, that they continue to bring industry, whether it's white collar, blue collar, new construction, you know, healthcare, music industry. We just have a really cool mecca of, you know, I call it the melting pot, that you can come here and really find your niche no matter what it is. I've really spent, Mayor Dean in Nashville has really done an amazing job of recruiting companies to come here. So fortunately for us, our values are up, are continuing to go up. I would say, you know, 6 months, 8 months ago, we started really seeing the shakeout of our inventory is diminishing, and we started seeing new construction coming back. I know you and I are going to talk about that a little bit today, but I'm very fortunate that I have a nationwide builder that came into our market that I was able to land this past year, and then I also have some smaller builders. So we're very diverse in what we sell. So we'll go to a first-time home buyer to the luxury market. We sell condos. Really, our market has trended into some rentals just because people are coming here and still have a house somewhere else they need to sell. So we've kind of gotten into that market a little bit. But we definitely see a lot of transient people coming into our market because of the relocation of the jobs and the opportunities here.
In your market, do you have a niche or a specialization?
I would say one thing that we really specialize in and that we're very good in is new construction. As I said, I got my feet wet there long, long, long time ago and was fortunate enough to continue that. But new construction, like anything else, is, you know, has its highs, has its lows, has its peaks, has its valleys. So it just depends on where we are in the land. Development 3 years ago, we didn't have any land on the ground or any lots on the ground, and banks weren't loaning any money to builders. We were trying to get rid of REO inventory. So we found ourselves saying, okay, well, we've got to shift gears. So kind of transitioned into the REO market a little bit. I do some Freddie Mac foreclosure stuff here in Middle Tennessee, which, having that diversity and having been in that market many, many, many years ago, it was good for us to have a little bit of knowledge. But I would say, no, I would say my personal niche is listings. I probably would say that communication is really big for us. We communicate weekly with our sellers, so we have really good retention of referrals from our previous and current clients. to refer listings, and then the new construction. However, my team does work a lot of buyers. We're very diverse in our relocation specialties, schools, knowledge of the market. So if I said Kendra Cook has a specialty, I would say it's listings, whether it's existing or new construction. It's about 50-50.
Sounds like the new construction market is coming back. What percentage of your business right now is new construction?
It's probably 15 to 20% and will continue to get bigger. As I said earlier, we have landed a nation, actually America's biggest builder, number one builder in the country, has come into our market, and I was very fortunate in that they've selected me to list their stuff. So we currently have four developments with lots on the ground with models and spec homes in different stages. And by February, we hope to be horizontal in 10 different developments. So that is definitely going to change over the next year. But currently, I'm about 15 to 20% of our business comes out of new construction.
Horizontal by the beginning of next year. What does that mean, horizontal in your market?
That means houses coming out of the ground in 10 developments. Right now we have 10 developments under contract, four we have closed on, and we actually have sticks and bricks coming up. And then our goal is in the next, that's about 6 months, to have six more going. So our target is horizontal in 10. So we've got some work to do. And, you know, my goal is to market and drive the traffic there and to take great care of the leads that we get and do good follow-up. And really, it was an honor to land them, but a lot of it is that I had the reputation that, hey, this person knows the market, knows the stats, can help you kind of dictate what to build and what price range to be in, but also she has great rapport with realtors in the area. I just finished being the Greater Nashville Association of Realtors president in 2012. I'm the immediate past president in 2013. So I have a ton of great relationships, and so they were really encouraged to partner with someone who could get their brand out there and that had a great reputation, but also knows new construction. So I was fortunate enough to land that account. So we've got a big plan ahead of us, and my team and I feel like we're the right people to help them meet the goals that they have.
I've got to follow up on the new construction question. This large builder, what's the name of the builder?
D.R. Horton.
D.R. Horton. We all want to know, how did you land D.R. Horton? What was the process that you went through to make that happen?
Well, I would love to tell you that I courted them and they were just wowed, but obviously it was by the grace of somebody other than me. Really what happened was they had spent a year in our marketplace. Honestly, Mike, that I didn't even know they were here. I'm sure there were people that knew they were here, but they were doing a lot of general market research and meeting people and finding what land was out there, meeting with banks, trying to see, you know, what was in foreclosure, what was coming up, and just really meeting people and getting their feet on the ground, and did a lot of preliminary work long before they called me. They had talked to different towns, town of Smyrna, and different home builders, went to the Builders Association Marketing and Sales and Marketing Council. And as they were talking to people, what they tell me is my name came up many times, that this is a go-to person in these counties, these areas, you know, you should probably visit with her. And I have to tell you, I'm almost ashamed to say it, but when they called me and wanted to meet on a Saturday morning, fortunately for me, I don't work on the weekends. And when he called me out of the blue to say, hey, I'd like to buy you a cup of coffee on a Saturday morning, I said, oh, I'm sorry, I'm off tomorrow. And he said, well, honestly, he said, I'm going back to Atlanta, you know, in the afternoon tomorrow. And then as he proceeded to tell me that he had heard my name multiple times in different settings and that my reputation had perceived it myself and that he would just like to visit with me, I kind of got a little bit of an attitude like, oh, so he wants free information from me. You know, that's kind of where our mind goes as realtors. Everybody wants something from us for free. And I don't know, that little voice in my head said, you know what, these people appreciate and respect you enough to give your name out. You need to do the right thing. And so I told him, I said, I'll give you an hour, and then I need to be on my way. I've got something else planned. And he said, okay. And so we met. And before I left office on Friday, I told my staff, I said, throw together a pre-listing packet for new construction. I'm just going to take it. So we met at Panera on a Saturday morning, and I went very reluctantly, probably not with the best attitude, but the guy was just the nicest guy when I got there. We just really hit it off. And 2.5 hours later, when I was about to head back to my car, I stood up and I pulled out of my purse my pre-listing packet, and I said, I probably would not be a good realtor if I didn't ask you for your business. I know that D.R. Horton Homes has sales and marketing teams all around the country, but if there's an opportunity, I would love a shot to earn your business when you get to town. And he said, if you hadn't asked for it, you would have never got it. He said, we'll be doing business. And sure enough, we are. So I say that to say, you know, sometimes we're put in positions that maybe we don't feel like we want to be in, or there's nothing in it for me. And it has really changed my mindset in that I go into every appointment thinking there's an opportunity. And I think that was probably the lesson that was put before me when I went into the appointment, was going with an open mind. And if you don't ask, you won't get. And so if there's a good message in this CD for the people listening, I would say, if you don't ask, you'll never receive. So do a little homework, go to those appointments, sometimes even when you don't want to, and ask for the business and see what happens.
The work that you're doing with the builders, let's break it down. It's starting back at the part where they're looking and evaluating raw land, and they're going to buy a large parcel and then split it up, develop it? Or are you coming in where they've already done all that and the stick and mortar is going in and it's coming out of the ground and you're going to start marketing? Where in that process are you?
I am definitely in the phase two of that, Mike. I do not do the land division. I don't do, what the development cost of the land, the curbs and the roads and all of that. I don't do any of that. Everything that comes to me is, hey, we have this under contract and there are 54 lots. Do some research. Tell us what price range of houses we need to put in there. What are the trends that are selling in the area? Is it master up? Is it master down? Is it 200 to 250? Is it 400,000? What's going to sell this? What does every house have to have? What's our standard feature look like? What are the others in the area doing? Are they offering closing costs? Are they not? So that's step one for me, is kind of educating them on what's going to sell and what's not going to sell in the marketplace of where they're at. And then the second piece of that is I run each subdivision like a separate business. Okay, so I do its own P&L entity, a personal profit and loss for each one of those. So one of my subdivisions is Woodmont. So every single month, the young lady that does my book sends me a P&L on everything that we spent in the Woodmont development, whether it's signage, whether it's sodas and cookies in the model home, whether it's the billboard on the interstate that directs traffic there, whether it's the weekend pointer sign. So each one of these developments stands on its own, and I know whether I'm making money or I'm not making money. So from the time I give them the information that they use to build the houses, then back to the drawing board, they go to start the construction and I go to the marketing side. So they have a marketing person that I communicate with. He sends me the floor plans. We get the flyers printed. We get the folders ordered. We get those ready to go in the model home. Then I start meeting with the local realtors and the brokers, letting them know we're coming into the market, kind of branding D.R. Horton with the neighborhood that's in their area. Whether that's a billboard on the side of the road, we do grand openings for each one of the models, ribbon cutting with the chamber, newspaper ads, radio station ads. They're going into a development where we already have some homeowners. I've got to make sure that they're great advocates for us as well. So we do some activities with the homeowners, whether it's a town hall meeting or invite them to the community pool for snow cones on us or whatever. It's really just branding D.R. Horton, but worrying about the marketing while they're worrying about getting the homes out of the ground and the roof on the top so we can get paid.
Do you have on-site sales?
Yes, I do. We have an on-site person in each development. There is a furnished model home in each development. Some of them will have a very nice sales trailer versus a model home, but we do have an on-site salesperson at each location.
You're going to be ramping up your staff here as these developments come online.
Absolutely. I just took both of my RP1s, what I call RP1s, realtor partners, my admin staff to lunch today, and we sat there and we said, okay, who's our next hire? And what is this person going to do? Because we always need to be thinking about the next hire. If anything, I would rather be a little overstaffed than understaffed, because it just wears on the team. It wears on me. You know, obviously, I have my job duties that I need to get taken care of. If I'm stepping in to help them take care of some things that they need or compensate for lack of where we have some needs or some holes in the team, I guess I would say. It takes me away from what I'm supposed to be doing, prospecting, taking care of our clients, retention, that kind of thing. So I always want to be thinking about the next position that we hire to make sure that we're always staffed well so we don't drop the ball, we don't get caught red-handed, not enough staff, people get stressed out, and that's when you lose your team members. And, you know, this, when the wheels start getting wobbly and coming off, that's where disaster happens in the team.
I got to go back for a second. You said in your research phase, you said master up, master down. I don't know what that means. What is that?
Well, I try to research what the trends in the market are. If everything that's selling has a master down on the main level, then we want to make sure that we have plenty of opportunities to have a master on the main level. If it's a master up, then we need to know that as well. So it's really helping them pick the plans that the market is dictating that we need in the development. And because, you know, they came from another market, they weren't in Tennessee, so they haven't been watching these trends for years. And they don't know, you know, what's selling and what's not. So it's my job to make sure that I educate them on what is really selling. And I use that as an example, a master bedroom up or a master bedroom down, or a carriage house garage. You know, you have a two-car garage attached to the house, maybe a third-car carriage garage that's attached to the side is a new trend here. Architectural shingles versus a flat shingle. Just any trends that I see that other builders are doing that's selling well, or, you know, people are requesting when they come to us for home search, I need to make sure I'm giving him that information so he's building the things that the public wants versus building spec houses and they sit there. He doesn't get paid. I don't get paid. It doesn't look very good for either one of us. So that's what the master up, master down. That's just kind of an example of really a market trend of something that could make or break a development. You know, if we built all houses and all the masters are up and the market is wanting masters down, then we've missed the mark.
Well, it sounds like you have a wide and deep knowledge base of new construction, of the actual components of these homes at a real in-depth level. How did you develop that?
I tell my staff, my buying staff here, our buyer's agents, go to everything you can go to. I mean, if there's a realtor open house, go. If there's a new construction model home that pops up in the marketplace, go. Learn about the builders. Learn about the products. Be familiar. When a relocation buyer comes here, our goal is to sell the city. Whoever they're coming to be employed with is going to sell the job. And that's our model. We'll sell the lifestyle, you sell the job. So we have to know what the market is. If somebody comes in from Texas and says, I'll use Michigan as a better example. We get people in from Michigan, they're like, well, everything there is built on a basement. And I just look at them and say, we don't have basements. That's probably not going to, you know, go over too well with them. I need to let them know why there's no basement. And I've learned in my many years here, there's a lot of rock in Middle Tennessee. It's not as easy to dig through rock. So when people come here and they're like, we have to have a house with a basement, I have to have a frank conversation with them as those are few and far between. And if you get one, you're going to pay for it because it's just not a trend that we have here. But I think a lot of it is just always be learning, always be a student. Always be out learning who your competition is or what the other builders are doing in the marketplace. Or, you know, if you sell a lot in one neighborhood, you know why those things, why that neighborhood sells. Maybe it's the amenities. Maybe it's the fact that everything does have a basement. Whatever the local trends are, I think education and knowledge is power when you're selling things. And it's no different in new construction or existing. I mean, you need to be very knowledgeable about what you're selling. So always be a student. That's one of my favorite sayings.
It sounds like you're really building up the new construction side. How many homes do you think you'll be selling? How many new construction homes do you think you'll be selling in, say, 2014?
I would love to say we may hit 70. My goal would be 70.
So you're building up to that because you've basically been selling maybe 15, 20 a year, and so now you're going to be basically tripling, almost quadrupling that.
Yes. Last year, we had just two small builders. This year, we've taken on a bigger builder that's local, and now we have the national builder. So I think between the four of them in the coming months, it won't be hard. D.R. Horton right now, we have about four, and we'll have 30 specs on the ground probably by January. So there's huge opportunity there.
Agents that are looking at the new construction market from the outside, they're probably going to want some more of these big picture metrics. And I think the two areas are what do you do for the builder and how do you get compensated for it? For instance, in that research phase, did you get compensated for that?
I did not. That's part of, you know, earning the commission when it closes. So my goal is always to ask for a full commission, whatever full commission is in your marketplace, and I'll do the research and I'll do the marketing. You build the product. And so far, so good. That's kind of how it's always been for me, is I like to control the marketing because I can track every lead that comes in the door. If we're spending $500 a month on an ad that nobody ever calls and says, I saw your ad, then I need to jerk the plug on that and put my money somewhere else. So it's very important that you're tracking the lead. So my goal is always, I'll do the feet on the ground work, I'll do the marketing, but when it's time to get paid, I want to get my keep, kind of thing. And that's really never been an issue for me, because we bring a lot of value to the builder. We do research what works in the market. We also research what marketing pieces work. We also let them know what the competition is doing, whether they're offering closing costs or they're not. We usually put together a package of a preferred lender, preferred title company. So when we do have some luncheons or whatever, they can help afford to pay for, you know, some of those things with us and kind of partner with us. So we do a lot of work, but then we're not getting, you know, nickeled and dimed on the back end. So that's really never been a big issue for us as far as not getting paid on the front end. And of course, I did have a 1-year exclusive listing agreement with them pretty much since day one. So a lot of that work I was doing, I knew I was going to eventually get paid for.
Very good. And so that exclusive listing agreement, do you get to list the entire subdivision or just a section of it?
No. Anything that they list in the year that we have their listing agreement goes under me. So right now we took over, the first one that we took over was Woodmont in Smyrna, and there was 28 lots on the ground with the right to get the next 34. So we came out of the ground with a model and 6 specs right off the bat. So we have all of those on the MLS, and anything they start construction-wise while we have that year agreement will go under us. Our second one is we started 4 plus a model, and it just kind of trends like that. We sell one, we start another one. So kind of keeps our pipeline full, which is good as far as listings. And then we obviously want them to keep growing, and we want to keep growing with them.
Let me just get this right. The builder does not front any of the money for the marketing. You are fronting all the money for the marketing and promotion, and then you're getting compensated at the end, just like a normal traditional listing. Is that correct?
That is exactly correct, and we track every penny that we spend. So we actually give them a copy of our P&L each month so they know what we're spending. When we went to an agreement together, we gave them a written marketing plan, just like we do our existing listing. So it said, you know, we're going to purchase a billboard on the side of the interstate for 6 months. It's going to cost us $1,000 a month. We're going to do apartment mailing. There's approximately 400 apartments around this development. It's going to cost us X. We're going to do, you know, once the model opens, we're going to do 1 a month for 4 months. It's going to cost X. And so we just built out a marketing plan for them, just like we do, hey, I'm going to do just listed cards. I'm going to put it on the MLS. I'm going to do a virtual tour. All the things that you do for your existing listing that you put in writing, you do the same thing for your builders. So you put it in writing up front, and then you show them where that is being paid for and taken care of monthly with our P&L.
What about the time frames? How long does it take for a builder to go from raw land to a product?
Well, it just depends. If the streets and the curbs and everything are in, basically in the first 4 developments that we're in, the lots were already on the ground, the roads were already there, so we are literally just going in, pulling a permit, and coming out of the ground. So that's probably 90 to 120 days, depending on the weather, you know, and their subs and how quick they can get a house up. So 90 to 120 days from the time the lot's prepped and ready for the house to go up. Now, if you're talking about raw land, no streets on the ground, no curbs, you know, it could take you 8 to 12 months to get the lots done to where the first stick would come out of the ground.
You have developments in both phases, right? You have some of your 4 developments right now. They've already got the improvements in the streets and the gutters and so forth. So those are coming out quicker. And then you have 6 more coming online. Are those raw land and you're watching the entire infrastructure go in?
Some of both, yes. We'll have some that are, we've just bought the land, we still have to go through zoning and planning and all that kind of stuff, and then some of them are going to be just like these, we just have to close on the land. And you know, D.R. Horton is obviously no dummy. They have been doing this a very, very long time and have a strategy of how to make this work. So, you know, we got the first one up and going, then we closed on the second, got that one up and going, now we close, you know, and so it's a steady growth for them versus, you know, trying to get 10 going at one time, which might just kill us all, the foreman and the realtor. And but, you know, they really staggered it quite nicely. So get some things coming out at different phases, which is great because most of them are within a 30-minute ride of each other. So it's really easy to say, okay, we don't have that plan here, but we can take you over here. And what we call that is cross-selling. So a lot of the same products, as in finishing the tile backsplash in the kitchen or some samples of cabinets. If they don't like what's in one model, we can get them to go look at another. So it's really having them coming at different phases is great for us as a sales team because we can cross-sell from one development to the other.
Well, I think there's going to be folks out there wondering, D.R. Horton, that's a huge company. Why didn't they just bring in their own staff and fill their own sales positions from some national pool of people?
Well, believe me, I ask myself that every day. And I'm just going to say I'm blessed and I'm going to do my best to keep it as long as I can. But we all know in real estate, nothing is forever. So I've been very open-minded, but I also know that I had a lot of resources that they needed. I know all, if not most, of the brokers around each development that they're pursuing and their future pursuant. I could open a lot of doors for them that would be not, I won't say they wouldn't open, but they would have taken a lot more knocking. We had our first ribbon cutting, and the town councilman showed up, and the gentleman from D.R. Horton looked at me, he's like, this guy just stood up and talked about you. And I was like, yeah, those are the relationships that I've had because I've been here a long time. And you never know when you might need a friend. And so I am very community-driven. I make a lot of great relationships, and I keep them, and I kind of feel like if you give it away, it always comes back. So who's to say 1 year, 2 years, 5 years down the road, D.R. Horton says, hey, we're going to bring our own sales team in and we're going to go a different way. I would not like it, but I'm prepared if that happens. But I will tell you, if I do a great job and I continue to strengthen that relationship and drive business to them, I'm hoping that they will say, why would we change? It's working. It's not broken. So I think when you get to a certain level, business person, entrepreneur, that's kind of what I call myself. I mean, everybody has business decisions that they have to make. Sometimes they're harder than others. And so that may become a decision they have to make in the future. But right here, right now, I'm working my tail off for them. We have a great relationship. We're growing them. And I just, you know, we'll be very happy when it just continues on this path, and but I have to, you know, also know that it may not always be here.
Sure. And a benefit for them, they're a national builder, they were outside the market. Now they have a local knowledge of the local market by a local player. They also have a variable cost rather than a fixed cost if they were trying to pay their own staff. You're working on a pure commission, and so if the market fluctuates, they're able to easily fluctuate without having to cut staff. That becomes your issue. And so there's a benefit for them as well to work with a contractor position and a local, as you mentioned several times, the local knowledge base that you have. So I think there's a couple advantages to them in the relationship also. And I'm assuming they probably do a similar arrangement around the nation. They've found that this model works for other agents in other markets. They should not shy away from national builders. Would you agree?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And there's a lot of opportunity. The other thing that I would say is one of the things that they were very, very direct about is a lot of their buyers from where they trend their markets around the country, the buyers that come into their model home, A, do not have a realtor to represent them to sell their home or to help them purchase. And a lot of them do have a home. So they wanted to make sure that they aligned with someone that said, hey, our on-site person cannot sell off of this site. But when somebody walks in the door and has a home to sell, we want to give that lead and that home to sell to somebody that can get it done. And with me having a primarily listing-based business, I was a great catch for them because I have a good marketing plan and I have a pre-listing packet that goes out and I'm able to have those hard conversations like, hey, you really need to paint this turquoise blue bedroom, where some realtors may not be able to have those hard conversations because at the end of the day, if the buyer does not sell their home, they cannot come on and purchase the one that D.R. Horton has built. So they wanted to make sure that they put their eggs in the basket with somebody that could sell the houses to get them in these new ones. So that's another whole side of the business that we as realtors sometimes shy away from the nationwide builders and say, oh, they have their own, you know, sales staff. But truly, they can use us as a resource when somebody comes in with a house to sell. They need a good realtor to refer those folks to get their house sold so they can buy the new one. So I would encourage people to have some relationships with on-site agents with the possibility that you may get a listing or two from them.
Ah, so you're picking up listings as well as helping them on the buyer side. The new home construction is a buyer, but that buyer may have a home to sell. What percentage of the time in your experience does somebody come in to the model home, want to buy the property, they need to sell their home, but they're not working with an agent, and therefore you can pick up that business? If you sell 100 new homes, how many of those are you going to pick up the listing on the old home?
Probably 30%.
So that helps even out the edges as well.
Yeah, it gives us a second whole industry of listings and group of listings that we wouldn't have maybe if we didn't have that new construction listed of drawing the buyers in as well.
In your experience, you've been working with the new construction and around the new construction market for a while. What are the best practices for a agent who's working with a builder to sell their homes? You mentioned, for instance, this idea of giving them a monthly P&L report. I thought that was really smart. Any other best practices or recommendations that an agent just getting into this, or that maybe they've been doing it a while but not full time, as far as the new construction side, what are some best practices you could tell them?
I would say on a weekly basis, kind of a meeting, face-to-face meeting with the builders, because we all know they're busy, but we're busy too. But where the disconnect usually comes is you don't know if you're not talking to them every week, what is frustrating them. And so I've made mistakes in my career. Oh, Lord, have I made mistakes. And one of them I would say was, in my earlier days, is the on-site person's there, he sees the builder all the time, I don't need to call. But honestly, the on-site person works for me, doesn't really work for the builder per se. I mean, they're selling their product, but, you know, I'm the one who tells them what time to be there and what ads have to be in and, you know, what meetings they have to attend. But the relationship is with me and the builder. So I make it a point every single week to reach out to the builder. Any issues? Did you see the ad this week? Anything I can help you with? Any frustrations? I went here. I did this. I promoted at a sales meeting. It's really just, hey, I'm doing what I told you I was going to do, but I'm also here if you need to vent. Because usually what happens is somebody on site is going to come in 20 minutes late. Well, inevitably, the builder's going to be sitting there watching the fact that he came in 20 minutes late. It might fester a little bit if it's a bad day for the builder. If he hasn't talked to me for 2 weeks, it's just going to fester a little more. And before you know it, you've lost a great account just because the communication wasn't there. So I would say make it a point to be in front of that builder every single week, even if it's just a phone call. One of the best things that D.R. Horton tells me is they're like, we see you in our neighborhoods all the time. I mean, I will leave my office for an appointment 15 minutes early just to drive through the neighborhood, because if they see my car, they know I'm involved. And it's just the little things that we as realtors get bogged down with, oh, I don't have time to do that, or that's not important. He doesn't want to hear from me. He's too busy. I promise you it's the complete opposite. They want to see you. They want to hear from you. They want to know that you're doing what you said you were going to do. And that's really where the P&L comes in for me with D.R. Horton is it's my accountability piece. Here was my marketing plan. Here's what I did. Here's my marketing plan. Here's what I did. And what I did is I do them in 6-month increments for them. So, you know, I knew when the model was coming out. I knew when we were going to have a grand opening. I knew the plan for the grand opening. I put it all in writing in my marketing plan, and then I backed it all up with the money I spent on those events and those things on the P&L. So it's just accountability. The one thing I would tell you is if you have a builder, stay in constant communication with them. Once a week is good. Let them see you in the development, check in with them. And then if you're courting a builder, it's the same thing. They need to hear from you. And really what they're looking for is market information. Hey, did you hear that such and such land got approved? There's 40 homes going in there. No, I didn't know about that. Are they going to be selling lots? Well, let me check on it for you. I mean, you're just always giving, feeding them information because these guys ride around in their truck all day. They don't sit behind a desk. They're not looking at comps. They're not looking at trends. So anytime you have somebody that you can give information to like that, 99% of them are going to be very welcoming of that information because it's not information they're going to go find themselves. So communication.
And you mentioned you're also working with some smaller builders. How did you get in with the smaller builders? How did that come about?
Doing just what I just told you. I started a mailing postcard probably 8 years ago of small local builders that I had met in the community or had met at Sales and Marketing Council or had met at a function, and I would get their card, and I just started a little did you know kind of fat card, or here's my stats for the month. If we have a really big month, we sold 10 new construction homes this month, just dripping on them, just a mail campaign. And I know when the market tanked in 08 and 09, different areas, different times, but everybody quit doing snail mail. It was like, it's too expensive and nobody reads it. Well, guess what? Nobody brought it back online and I'm still doing it and it still works today. So if you want to know what marketing I do snail mail, a lot of it. But it works, and it's just there's 25 or 30 builders in our little builder group, and we do an evidence of success mailer card every single month. I actually start recording tomorrow a little called Kendra's Corner, like a little snippet, that we're going to email to those guys. And just like, this is where the permits were last year at this time. This is where we are this year. You know, this is the upcoming development. Did you see this new construction site started? Just little bitty 30-45 second snippets of new construction information to the builders, and just kind of drip, continuing to drip on some that I have and some that I don't have. Don't want to be intrusive, but I want them to know that I'm successful and I'm here and I know what I'm doing.
Kendra, I'd like to move on at this point and talk about a really big portion of your business, and that is your working your past clients, your sphere of influence. If I counted up things right, I think that that's about 60% of your business. Is that correct?
Yeah, and it fluctuates, you know, now that the builders have come back in. But I will tell you, in 2011, it was over 80% of our business.
So it's a real core of your business. Let's talk about that. Let's talk first about the database itself. How big is the database? How many people, how many past clients and sphere of influence do you have inside your database?
My goal, Mike, is to keep it under 450 people, and I will tell you why. My sphere of influence, that includes my current clients, my past clients, my business partners. And my goal is to keep it right around 450. And the reason is because I don't know that I can love on, and I say that term very loosely with business people. They go, oh my gosh, you can't say that in our business. But I really want to take extra great care of my database. I want to love on them consistently throughout the year, which I will be glad to expand on. But that's mail, that's call, that's visit, that's email, that's invitation-only events. And I just don't think I can have a relationship with many more than 450 people and know them and know what's going on in their life. And that's really the core of my business is I want to work with people that know me, trust me, like me, and will refer me. And I can't do that with thousands of people. I meet other realtors who are like, well, we have 1,200 people on our database. I'm like, do you know them all? I'm like, no, I don't know those people. I just mail to them. I'm like, well, what does that do? You know, you might as well buy an ad and put it in the magazine and just send it out to the world, because if you're mailing to people that really don't know you, it's hard to form a great relationship or a great referral partnership. So my motto has always been smaller and deeper. I like to build really good rapport with my clients. I like to invite them to events. I like them to know what's going on in my world. I like to know what's going on in their world. And I can't tell you what a joy it is when you answer the phone and somebody says, hey, Mr. or Mrs. Smith told me to call because you're the best. Can you come list our house? Or I was referred to you, like with the D.R. Horton thing. I mean, their competitors, builders, other builders in this marketplace referred them to me. And it's like, wow, that's a great compliment. So that's really the biggest amount of my business comes out of my database, and 450 is about all I can love on at a time.
Oh, that's great. Well, that's really interesting because I've noticed in the past client and sphere of influence models, there tend to be two models. One is a very restrictive model where it's a very tight-knit group, a lot of selection is going on. And the other concept is just add everyone to the list and increase your odds of success. You seem to be in the first camp, and in fact, it sounds to me like you're more restrictive than I've ever heard before. For instance, you told me you have 1,500 past clients. How do you not have all 1,500 in this group?
Well, fortunately or unfortunately, how you look at it is people move in and out of town. You know, we do a ton of reload in and a ton of reload out. The other thing is a lot of that is new construction. So we have the same builder. Repetition. So, you know, when you sell 250 houses for one builder, when that makes up close to 16, when you're looking at 1,600, it's not really as many as it looks like. So that kind of goes back to my model. I like to work smarter and not harder. So if I only have 20 sellers versus 60 sellers, it makes it a little easier. So, yeah, so our database is made up of people who have bond sold with us, but we do tend to have a lot of relocation. And here's what I do. If people move out of state, we do a monthly email blast. So we keep them on our email blast, so they still kind of keep in touch with us and keep our information. It comes to them once a month. The greatest thing is when they call and say, hey, we moved away for 3 years and now we're coming back. And you stayed in touch with us and we want to use you again. So I don't ever want to cut that tie completely. But at the same time, it's a lot cheaper to send an email than it is to continue to mail to those folks. So that's kind of our motto. If they're moving out of state, we keep them on the email blast. We just don't do the snail mail.
How do you track your database? Are you using a certain software program?
We use Agent Office, which was initially written for RE/MAX agents, I believe, and then several years ago it went public. And it's very similar to Top Producer, where you can set up your checklist and you can have separate calendars for your agents and yourself. But we've been using it for several years, and then I actually own my server, so we can all connect to the server to get in there. So it's not web-based, which I know several people call me and say, is it web-based? And unfortunately, it's not. Top Producer is, but they're very similar, but that's what I use as Agent Office.
Let's talk about how you're staying in touch with your past clients and sphere of influence. You mentioned some of the highlights. Give us some of the details. What are you doing throughout the year? How many contacts are you making? What's your goal in that department, and how are you making those contacts?
We do mail, call, visit. So I'll start with the mail. Our database gets two pieces of mail a month from us. One of them is very personal, the letter of the heart. We send something that's going on with me personally, because these are people that I've worked with that know me, that have listed with me or whatever. It may be about a vacation. It may be something, you know, an expansion of the team, whatever, something just on a personal level that's going on with my life. So everybody in the database gets that on the second week of the month. Then on the fourth week of the month, they get what we call an evidence of success postcard, which is basically could be a testimonial. If we survey all of our clients, a lot of times we get great surveys back, and we ask for their permission to use their survey or their, you know, quote off of the survey, and they allow us to do that. So we put that into a postcard. If we don't have a survey to use, we can use what we call a stats card. We've listed this many. We've sold this many. Our average days on the market is this. It could be a just listed. It could be a just sold. Hey, we listed and sold this house in the same day. Just something showing that we're successful. So we hit them on the personal level once a month, and then we hit them on the business level, showing that we're successful. And then actually the third week of the month is when our email blast goes out that I referred to earlier. We use MyEmma or Emma.com to send that. And that is how we invite people to events that we're having in the community, or it has to have something to do with the business. So, you know, tax credit, when the tax credit was big, we wrote a lot about that. Right now we write a lot about new construction and growth, you know, job growth, anything to do with economic development, schools, something to do with business. Our e-news blast goes out. It's very short and sweet. So those are the three ways we touch them, mail and email. That goes out every month. The second thing that we do is, I said call, and believe it or not, I call everybody in my database twice a year. And I have a system that I use. It's called the letter of the week. So on Monday, one of my staff print out whatever letter I am for that week, in the middle of the alphabet on, you know, if it, let's say it's A's. So actually this week I'm on K's. I've already finished my K's this week. But I call everybody in my database whose last name starts with a K this week. And that call really is, hi, this is Kendra. If I get a voice note, it's basically, I'm sorry I missed you. Just wanted to catch up. Hope you had a great summer. Our team always enjoys catching up with you. If you have a minute, call us back. If not, we understand, but we do ask that you keep us in mind for future referrals, or if you need any, you know, real estate services, give us a call, and I leave my number. If I get them, it's building rapport. How's your summer been? The kids back in school? Everything good in the house? Anything going on? Where'd you go on vacation? Just anything to build rapport with these folks. These are people that know you, like you, and trust you, so build a little rapport. And then at the end, you always close with, hey, who do you know that needs to buy or sell? Or have you come across anybody that could use our services? Or is there anything I could do for you? And you're always ABC, always be closing and asking for the business. So that's the calls that we make. And the greatest thing is we catch them at different times throughout the year. So it might be, hey, I'm just calling to remind you to spring your clock forward or turn your clock back. Could be, I hope you have a great holiday. Just call to say happy Thanksgiving. I mean, there's always something you can say. Every week of the year, you can say something. And so that's how I call them, and that's the system I use to track. I actually write the sheet that they give me with the folks' names and numbers on them. I make notes out beside them. Expecting a baby, maybe moving, job transfer, whatever, anything that would send up a red flag to my staff, give it back to them, and then they put the notes in the database for me, so the next time I call, I can see what we talked about the last time. Or if it says, hey, baby, due in October, they're going to go to my October calendar and put me a reminder in there to call and check on it. It's really just a system to stay in touch. The one thing that I would say here, Mike, that blows me away is we as realtors as a whole are scared to death of the phone. And it's free, which is my favorite word, F-R-E-E, free. and number two, they can't hit your, you know, I mean, these are people that know you and like you. So there's no, you know, it should be the easiest call. And sometimes we would rather make a cold call to somebody that doesn't know us and take the chance of getting hung up on than calling people who really like us, which kind of blows me away. But I love to call my clients and catch up. So that's my call system. And then the third thing I said, visit, and I'm sure everybody on the CD listening or whatever says, oh my gosh, are you crazy? How do you, you know, go visit 400 to 450 people a year? And I don't. I invite them to come visit me. And so I hold client parties throughout the year and invite my database to come. We changed the rules about 3 years ago, and we used to do mail invitations and try to get everybody to follow back up and RSVP and all that. And we changed that and said, you know what? The only people that will get invited are those who have signed up on our email blast. So all of our invitations go out through our email blast now. The email blast goes out once a month. If we have an event coming up, they're invited through that. So what happens is if you become a buyer or a seller on our team, we automatically sign you up for the e-news blast. Now you have the option to opt out or accept with that system. If they choose not to accept, then they will not get the invitation to the client parties. If they accept, then they'll get our email blast and then our invitations to our parties. And I do explain that when we sign them up for it. So the client parties, I'll give you some samples if that will help. We do one a quarter. We do Goodwill drives. We sponsor a Goodwill truck, which when I say sponsor, I mean that's free. We just call them and ask them to bring it and set it up maybe in your parking lot, the real estate company. Invite all your clients to clean out their garage. You can do that around the spring cleaning time. Have them clean out their garage and bring gently used things to the Goodwill store. It's great for the community. It's also great for your clients to get to see you. We do a back to school bash for our Nashville Sounds, which is a minor league baseball team that we have. We do usually a Monday night game where the tickets are a little cheaper and we only buy so many tickets. So we make it kind of a forced, you've got to either commit to come or not kind of thing. So maybe we'll buy 100 tickets. And say the first 100 people can have the tickets, and they put us all together behind home plate. And we make that our back-to-school bash. So we stuff backpacks with some school supplies for all the kids that come. And the backpack just happens to have my logo on it. And so those little drawstring backpacks that are pretty inexpensive that all the kids love now, those things start floating around everywhere. Very inexpensive event. The biggest one that we do every single year that is hugely, hugely attended is we do a movie every year, rent the movie theater, and invite our database to come. And how that works is I have a lot of people call me and go, how did you get the theater to give you the theater. I'm like, well, they didn't give it to me. I did pay for it. But here's the concept. Most theaters do not open till noon on a Saturday. And so when we have a new release, it's always a family movie, so they bring the family. We have them open the doors at 9 o'clock for us, and we start the movie promptly at 10, and then we're all gone by 12. The greatest thing for me is I don't like to cook and clean because that's not really my gift. And so when I go to the movie theater, I can stand at the door and shake hands and kiss babies and get them all in the movie, and somebody else popped the popcorn and made the sodas, and they're going to clean up the mess, and then I get to see them all when they leave. And it's a great family day had by all. So very inexpensive. It's about $8 a person. So, you know, if you invite 100 of your clients, maybe you get your lender or title company to partner with you. But it is hugely successful, and every year we have a packed out house. So those are some samples. We also do some other things in the community. We do an environmental day. Again, it doesn't cost us anything, but we have a shred truck come. We have the police department come to take old medicines out of people's houses. You know, they can bring them there and they'll dispose of them. We also have a restoration company that will take old paint cans and stuff. Again, this is a spring cleaning kind of thing or a fall thing before we're going into winter, really getting people to be environmentally friendly and not throw things away that shouldn't be, you know, so they don't end up where they're not supposed to be. But anything like that, that you can get your clients to come to you, I will tell you this, do I see all 400 of them in a year? No. But you know what they do remember is, hey, she's doing these events. She's inviting me. I should go. And usually out of obligation, I'll see most of them at least once a year.
This is the end of part one. The interview continues on part two.